Can anything good come out of the United Nations? That's today's issue.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Now your hosts, Marvin Sanders and Jeff Chamblee.
Come out of the United Nations. That's a wonderful thought.
I knew you were going to go there. Yeah, the United States could probably come out of the United Nations.
If the United States came out of the United Nations, the United States would be something good out of the United Nations.
This is going to be one of those programs that certain people like you and me are going to be glued to the radio for the next hour or so.
But this is high on my list of hot-button issues, as they say.
Well, it deserves to be, because the United Nations is a sprawling giant, as we will talk to our guest today, Nathan Tabor. The book is called The Beast on the East River, The UN Threat to America's Sovereignty and Security. Going to be a great interview. We invite folks to stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Just a couple of items before we talk to Nathan Tabor. And actually, we have another guest, actually a recorded program from earlier. A couple of items. We reported about the Christmas trees being taken down from the Seattle Tacoma Airport, the SeaTac Airport, because the rabbi sued, or said he was going to sue, if they didn't put up a menorah.
Right.
Or some organization said they were going to sue. And the rabbi himself, I think, said that they had overreacted and that it wasn't his intention to get them to remove the Christmas trees. He just wanted a menorah put up.
Methinks the rabbi has received emails.
Methinks he's gotten a little bit of pressure. But the story has a happy ending.
Yes.
For those who want Christmas trees up in the airport, they're back up.
They are back up.
They put the Christmas trees back up, and they promised that in the not-too-distant future, they're going to look at ways to... I'm guessing, they didn't say it exactly this way, but I'm guessing they're going to put up a menorah next time as well.
I would love to hear what the workers, these workers are saying when these 14 giant, these are large trees. Okay, take them down. Okay, put them up. Take them down. Now put them up.
That's right.
There's got to be some interesting talk going on among the workers.
Yeah, like boot camp. Have you ever been to boot camp? Were you ever in boot camp?
No, sir, I was not.
You never were in boot camp. But I was never in boot camp. I got a close-up look at similar kinds of things that go on. But yeah. That's JJ whispered boot camp in my ear, and that's pretty. That's right. Dig a ditch, fill it up. You know, gotta stay busy. Anyway, another item on a more serious note. It's kind of related to our discussion of the United Nations. But last night on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, President Carter made an appearance. Did you see that?
I did, and I read the report about it this morning, though.
I watched it, and I have to confess, President Carter is someone that when I'm hearing him talk in a comfortable setting, like on the set there with Jay Leno, I'm impressed with him as a humble man, as somebody who is seems to be a nice guy, and that I could like personally. If we ever got to spend time together, it probably would be a comfortable time for me. That's me,
right?
Personally, because I love peanuts. I mean, to start with, that's, you know, he's like the king of peanuts. But he was talking about the fact that his new book has created quite a stir, and he's been very critical of Israel and the Bush administration. Obviously, everything seems to come down to an attack on Bush for not doing something. And he claims that there have been no peace negotiations since President Clinton left office. Made that statement. Then he went on to talk about how the Palestinians are poorly treated, and the Israelis need to straighten up their act. I thought as I was listening to that, does anybody remember the way the peace negotiations ended when President Clinton left office? Does anybody remember that the Israelis said, "Okay, we're tired of fighting, Mr. Arafat. We will give you 95%, 97% of all that you ask." And at that moment, President Yasser Arafat said, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm walking away from these negotiations and starting an intifada.
Yeah.
And yet President Clinton comes on board, and our President Carter comes on TV and says, this is a quote, there hasn't been a single day of negotiation for peace since Bill Clinton left office. In the last 6 years, not a single day of peace negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was his appearance on the show as fiery as the rhetoric that I'm reading?
No.
Okay.
No. He's a very quiet, laid back kind of man. It was just a pleasant conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pleasant conversation. And Jay Leno, you could tell Jay Leno was a little bit uncomfortable because at least I thought he was. He said, every time the Israelis try, give away a little piece of land, it just means the terrorists or the people that want to kill them or some language like that, mm-hmm. just move closer.
Mm-hmm.
He understood what was going on, but President Carter, I don't know. We'll talk about that on another day.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
Before we go to Nathan Tabor, back Thanksgiving, we had an opportunity to have a conversation with Worcester. Am I pronouncing the Morrill Worcester?
I think that's
the way he pronounces his name. Anyway, we had a chance to have a conversation with him. He has a wreath company that does something pretty spectacular, and we recorded this for our Thanksgiving program. Technical difficulties kept us from airing it at that time, but we think it's important enough that we want our listeners to hear this conversation that we had with him. So let's go to that interview.
We want to talk to someone who I'm thankful for the gesture that they have made, and we'll get them to tell us about it. I would like to introduce Morrill Worcester of Worcester Wreath Company to you now. Morrill, welcome to the program.
Yes. Well, thanks for having me on.
Morrill, tell us a little bit about Worcester Wreath Company to start with.
Well, I don't know where you want to begin. The company, I started the company back in 1971, and it's ran continuously since then.
This is Tim, Morrill. What does a wreath company do?
Well, we make we're a seasonal business. Although we run year-round with a reduced crew to get ready from one year to another, but basically we're a business that operates about 7 or 8 weeks a year wide open, and again we prepare for the upcoming Christmas season almost immediately after one Christmas is over. We're starting to prepare for another one.
You sound like a New Englander.
Well, yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, I've lived in the Maine area all my life.
Mm-hmm. Morrill, you are making a very special donation each year. Tell us about that.
Well, we donate anywhere from $4,500 to $5,000, sometimes a little bit more, Christmas wreaths to Arlington National Cemetery every year.
Why do you do that?
Well, just to honor the veterans and I think you have to go back to the beginning. You know, my business, we started in 71 and I sold 500 wreaths that year. And we've grown a lot in the 35 years that we've been doing this. And this year we should top 500,000. And you just can't do that. I don't think you could do that anywhere else except right here in the United States. And really, I think we're very thankful for the opportunities that we've had and the growth that we've experienced. And it's got a lot to do with the freedom that we have in this country. And, of course, the freedom is a lot to do with what the military has done for us and the people mm-hmm. that gave the ultimate sacrifice, and so on.
How do you get these wreaths down from Maine or wherever your business is to Arlington National Cemetery?
Well, they go by truck, and that's important to say too. I think somehow people think that I donate the wreaths and I actually donate the trucking of the wreaths as well, and that's not the case. There's been a company we've been doing this for the past 14 years, and the same company we donate the wreaths, make the wreaths, decorate them, and all that. And then we place them on the graves. But the trucking is done by another company. They've donated their services. The name of the company is Bluebird Ranch Trucking Company out of Jonesboro, Maine. And they've been there since day one doing the transportation.
Tim and I go to Washington, D.C. a couple of times a year, leading a group of people who go to see the spiritual heritage of our nation. One of the stops on our tour is always Arlington National Cemetery, and in my opinion, it's one of the most reverent, most beautiful places in America. That's just my opinion.
Well, that's my opinion too.
And we go to the Tomb of the Unknowns, and occasionally we'll see a wreath laying ceremony there. But it's such an impressive. It just gives you a sense of awe as you stand there and watch the guards there at the tomb. Have you ever had an opportunity to go during the Christmas season and see your wreaths laid there in the graveyards, in the cemeteries?
Oh yeah. I've all 14 years that we've done this, I personally drive down from Maine to the cemetery and participate in the wreath laying on. And then we drive back. So, oh yeah, we've been there every single year.
Well, Morrow, if someone is listening right now and they would like to check this out on the internet, what is the website?
It's www.wreathsacrossamerica.org.
Is that simple?
Yeah, one word, wreathsacrossamerica.org.
www.wreathsacrossamerica.org.
Yeah.
There's some photographs there, by the way, folks, of Arlington National Cemetery with the wreaths in front of the headstones, 5,000 of them that Merrill and his company donate. And Morrill, is it Morrill or Merrill?
It's Morrill.
Morrill and his company donate. And it's very impressive. The photographs are very impressive, Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate what Morrill and his company do here, and encourage people to find out more information about it and maybe order some wreaths from his company.
Let me read a message from Morrill. You don't mind if I read your own words back to you, do you, Morrill?
No, that's fine.
Okay. On behalf of everyone here at Worcester, on behalf of everyone at Worcester Wreath, my wife, Karen, our family, and all the people who have made the Arlington Wreath Project their work for so many years, we wish to express our appreciation for the many phone calls, emails, and letters of thanks. It provides the inspiration for all of us to renew our commitment to honor the men and women of the armed forces who have served and those who are currently serving our country. To each, and especially those who made the ultimate sacrifice, we owe unwavering support and a profound debt of gratitude for preserving the way of life we all enjoy here in the United States of America. Well said, and thank you very much, Morrill, for being with us today on the program.
Yes, sir.
God bless you and what you're doing there, Morrill. We appreciate it very much. We encourage people to go check it out at wreathsacrossamerica.org, and maybe we'll talk to you again next year.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
And a great interview with a man who's doing a great work, and we hope our listeners will visit that website and find out what he's doing there. Marvin, I'm going to spend the rest of the hour talking about the United Nations and their influence on the United States. And
I've been talking about them for years.
I know you have. We're going to continue for the next 40 minutes or so. Nathan Tabor's our guest. He's a former GOP congressional candidate and founder and contributing editor to theconservativevoice.com. His commentaries are heard on over 100 outlets, including humanevents.com, townhall.com. Also, his radio program is heard on over 250 radio stations. His book is called The Beast on the East River, The UN Threat to America's Sovereignty and Security. Nathan Tabor, welcome to the program.
Hey, good to be here with you all.
Well, Nathan, just looking at the title, I'm guessing that this East River entity is not a very pleasant thing to you. Tell us about the beast.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to be invited to their Christmas party.
They're not going to have a Christmas party.
Boy, that's true. There might be, you know, Christmas trees out in the front.
Yeah.
The title of the book, when I was working with Thomas Nelson on it, we were trying to, you know, come up with what best describes the United Nations and their agenda. And we all suddenly kind of looked at each other and said, the beast. They are trying, a beast goes in and tries to consume and destroy everything that something stands for or stands against. And, of course, the United Nations is located on the East River in New York. So the title really sums up, and then we go into a really in-depth detail of the agenda of what the United Nations is trying to do.
Let's talk about some of the things that the United Nations is trying to do. I tell you what, let's start with one of the areas that really gets my juices flowing every time I hear somebody mention it, and that is, well, let's say the Statue of Liberty. Let's say Independence Hall. Let's say some of those other wonderful historic sites in America. What do those sites have in common? Tell us, Nathan.
Yeah, and they all have, what they have in common is a treaty from 1972. It was the Convention Concerning the Protection of the World Cultural and National Heritage that the U.S. ratified. This is a direct quote from the World Heritage website. It says, "World Heritage sites belong to all the peoples of the world, irrespective of the territory on which they are located." Now, when you all bought your homes and signed your mortgage, was there an asterisk at the bottom that said it belongs to all the people of your state?
No.
Certainly not. You wouldn't have signed it.
Right.
The significance of this is when you start looking at the founders of the UN and their Marxist sympathizers and communist and socialistic ideologies, and then look to the Habitat One conference in the 70s where the UN comes out and says that the private ownership of land is a social injustice and that the government, the public, should own all the land, and look at Bill Clinton in 1995 when he was president then, got the United Nations to declare the Yellowstone National Park as a World Heritage Site in danger, and they shut down a private gold mine on private property and skip to the, you know, today, eminent domain and the Kelo decision, you see quickly that the United Nations has an agenda to where the private ownership of property will not be something that they will tolerate in the future.
And folks in the West seem to understand that better than folks back East. Why is that?
Well, because you have a lot more, you know, go to the Yellowstone National Park and you drive up and there's plaques there that say this is part of the Biosphere Reserve or part of the World Heritage Sites managed by the United Nations. So I think you start seeing a little bit, you know, more of what's taking place there.
Nathan, take us back a little ways and talk about maybe the roots of the philosophy of one world government and how the United Nations has grown into this kind of a beast.
You don't have to go all the way back to the Old Testament, just, you know, kind of recent history.
Well, you know, and there is a strong tie, you know, Christianity, not per se with my book, but there is a lot of, you know, what has to be in place. But, you know, go back to when the UN was put into place, when it was ratified in 1945, the agenda of the UN was to protect the sovereignty of all nations and to basically be a moderator, a round table for nations to come together and discuss what was taking place. We were just coming out of World War II. What has happened, unfortunately, is when you look at, like, Sir Julian Huxley, who set up UNESCO, you know, in his writings in 1946, says he believed in no moral absolutes and believed that children should not be taught moral absolutes. Then you skip forward, you know, 60s and 70s, and you see what starts happening in the education system, prayer being taken out of schools, and you skip to the 2006, 2005, when No Child Left Behind was put into place, and you look at the agenda of, you know, we're not teaching creation science, we're not teaching abstinence-based educations, we're not teaching critical thought, we're teaching correct thought, and the agenda of the United Nations is full in force in our education system.
That's frightening to most of us who are looking at what's going to happen to the next couple of generations if something isn't done. Let's move into another area. We've got a lot of ground to cover here. Uh, we we were quite exercised some years back over the establishment of organizations like the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and other trade organizations that seemed to us to be attacks on American sovereignty. I mean, if you take it to its limit, that seemed to be what was going on there. What's the UN's involvement in that?
Well, yeah, you look at, and a lot of people say, oh, well, the United Nations, they can't be that powerful. But, you know, take recently in the United States, take CAFTA and NAFTA. These are agendas put forth by the United Nations. You know, tear down the barriers, tear down the borders, make everybody part of the bigger community. Look at the European Union that's taking place. You know, currently there's talk of the FTAA, there's talk of this supranational highway running from the tip bottom of Mexico to the top of Canada and all throughout the United States. Well, this is, you know, really when you start talking about the WTO and these other, you know, world organizations, world currencies, you know, official languages, this has to take place because there's three things that the United Nations needs to have in place to have a new world order. It's taxing authority, court authority, and military authority. And I think where this all starts is with education, because they realize as long as folks like yourself and myself and others are out there and we're educated on the issues, they're not going to be able to implement their plan. Now, one thing I do like to give facts, and the book has over 400 footnotes in it. Here's a direct quote from the United Nations about our education system. It says, as long as the child breathes the poisoned air of nationalism, education and world-mindedness can produce only rather precarious results. As we have pointed out, it is frequently the family that infects the child with extreme nationalism. And several pages on over, they go on to quote, and this is back from 1946, then president of the National Education Association, which is not a friend to the family, talks about basically, look, a teacher is going to have a child much longer than their parents do. So we have to be able to teach, this is a quote, the teacher can do much to prepare the hearts and minds of children for global understanding and cooperation. So you pick up your kids' textbooks today, and we're not teaching the Constitution, we're not teaching the Bill of Rights. So when agendas like the NAFTA and CAFTA, the WTO come along, people support it because they believe that's what they've been taught, that, so they believe it.
So Nathan, if there's a group of people, so whether they be homeschoolers or Christian schoolers, parochial schools, or any other entity, church schools, that are teaching infectious nationalism, as they would put it, they see that as a threat?
They see that as a threat because if you're teaching the child the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, take the Second Amendment. If you're teaching the child that they have the right to keep and bear arms, you're going to have a problem with the UN gun control agenda that they want to put in place. They do not want, they look at the UK, they do not want individuals to have the right to keep and bear an arm. But you go into our school systems today, outside of Christian schools and homeschoolers, what are they teaching about the Second Amendment? They're teaching that a standing military or militia are the only ones that have a right to keep a gun. So in 30 years, 40, 50, 60 years, they'll knock on little Johnny, who's now 40 or 50 years old, and say, we need your gun. Well, he's going to hand it right over because that's what he's been taught.
Yeah. Well, when we come back from the break, we will continue our discussion with Nathan Tabor, author of The Beast on the East River, which is available at our website, afr.net, or at bookstores everywhere. Nathan, when we come back from the break, I'd like to get into some of these other United Nations issues, global warming, and, well, let's talk about the Kyoto Protocols. We refuse to sign the Kyoto Treaty, and yet... look at what's happening. It's like we're being forced in a direction that we said a long time ago we didn't want to go. But we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. Stay tuned.
It's all about you. Jesus set aside the glory of heaven to be born on earth for you. Why a manger? Why Mary? Hosts Tim Wildman and Marvin Sanders welcome Brock and Bodie Taney to the next day's issue to discuss their latest book, Why a Manger, and the lawsuit it provoked from the producers of the Nativity Story movie. That's the next today's issues, 11:05 Eastern, 10:05 Central, on AFR, Today's Radio for Life.